Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Back to Tommy Tucker, WWL, AM, FM, and .com.
Thank you, David Blake. 9:09 now, and at 9:35, we're going to go live on Facebook, about 9:31, actually, and we're going to have a new feature, Ask Tommy. So you can either ask me anything online, or at least with the on a Facebook page, WWL, or you can text your question in now, and our staff will keep track of them, and then I'll answer them live on Facebook. So there are no limits. It can be about anything in the world that you want because I am a well-rounded guy. You know that. I can get personal or anything, but any question about anything, my outlook on things, my theories on things, just go ahead and ask me. Ahead of time, you can text at 87870, or you can join us live on Facebook at 9:31. You know, one of the things, Edmund Malesky joins us now, professor of political economy and the associate chair of the political science department at Duke University. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Tommy. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, sir. You know, it seems to me that, and I said this a long time ago, every politician likes to say that they created jobs, right? Because, you know, at the end of the term, when it comes to re-election, Edmund Malesky created 35 jobs or what have you. And a lot of times that is because of incentives that are given. And sometimes I think so many incentives are given, nobody looks at what's coming out of the back door. And as a result, sometimes the jobs are so subsidized, it's as though the government itself is paying those salaries while the politicians love to say they created jobs. Am I off base there or not, Edmund?
No, I think that's a pretty great synopsis of it. I guess the way I say it is, so first of all, it's not even clear that the jobs themselves were created. As we're learning in New Jersey and Baltimore and some other places after audits of the job creation claims, after the incentives have been done, the numbers that were proposed were not actually anywhere near the actual number of jobs that were created by the companies. But I think it goes, the reason why these sort of tax incentive policies like corporate tax reductions or property tax abatements are popular with politicians is because, unlike building infrastructure or education policies, politicians can attach their name directly to the policy. They can say, I say this. It's much more difficult to take credit for infrastructure, which was built before you came into office, or human capital that was developed with education policies before you came into office. Tax incentives are a great way for a politician to literally claim credit for the job creation. And that's why they're popular.
So what has your research, Edmund, found as far as it relates to economic incentives?
Well, okay. So I think it's first. I think we can start with the sort of the premise of your question first, which is, you know, are the effect at all? And I think, you know, everybody can imagine the successful case of incentives. There's one or two that may have paid off, but as a whole, they're generally been disappointing. And you can say that they disappoint in three different types of ways. So the first way, they're ineffective, inefficient, or distortionary. So ineffective, most of the research shows that, for the most part, companies aren't making their decisions based on the tax incentives. They're making their decisions based on the size of the market, infrastructure, the quality of human capital. We saw this in the Amazon case just recently. And so the incentives are very important and they actually end up being redundant.
Edmund, so, I'll tell you what we're going to do is we're going to take a break early. We're going to pick it up here when we come back because while we talk about ineffective, the phone line appears to be ineffective, and we have a little bit of trouble with that. So we're going to take a break. We'll reconnect with you because I think your message is important, and we want everybody to be able to hear it clearly. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, and if you have any questions or comments on tax incentives to businesses, you can text them to 87870, and I will run them by our guest, Edmund Maleski, professor of political economy and the associate chair of the political science department at Duke University. Back in a moment, WWL. 918, our technicians have reestablished connections with Edmund Maleski, professor of political economy and the associate chair of the politics at the political science department, rather, at Duke University. So we're talking, Edmund, about incentives and, you know, a study I think that you were involved with here, why states and cities should stop handing out billions in economic incentives to companies. And before we had to take the break, you're talking about them being ineffective, inefficient, and distortions. Let's go back to ineffective and pretend that nobody heard what you said because, well, nobody heard what you said.
I apologize for that. When I get nervous, I walk in, talk, and I probably walk myself right into a dead zone.
Well, there's no need to be nervous. You're among friends here, Edmund.
All right. So, yeah, so in general,
Edmund, go back to where you were and sit down.
Can you hear me now?
No, don't move. Stay right there, yes.
Oh, I'm right there.
All right, Edmund. Well, apparently I lied. We're gonna do this. We'll try to reestablish with Edmund. And I'd like to take your calls on this because I used to think that the film industry was some kind of boondoggle, but I don't think it is now. I think it employs a lot of people that have fulfilling jobs, and I think it's a good thing that we do. And I think it's unfair to harshly single out the film industry when so many other industries get tax credits to be in business here. So if you are in the film industry specifically, I'll take your call at 260-1870 and find out what a difference it's made in your life. Or maybe if you're an investor and there are these incentives where if you develop a piece of property, by the time you get the credits on them, you basically get the property for free, or at least the development of it is for free. And the guest we have now says that, you know what, that's not necessarily the case. And do you have a problem with industries that are subsidized as a taxpayer? Because I think gainful employment is better than welfare. And I in no way mean to imply that the people that are skilled in the film industry are taking welfare. I'm just saying even if it's a wash and the industry gets contributes only what it gets back, then I think there could be some things that lanyap, if you will, that go on top of it. Edmund Maleski, professor of political economy and the associate chair of the political science department at Duke University, is here again. Hey, Edmund.
Hey, how's it going? I'm back.
So we're gonna duct tape you to the chair if you keep moving. So
okay.
We have people outside of your front door. Just be aware of that. Now,
all right,
seriously, let's go back to ineffective, inefficient, and distortions as it relates to economic incentives.
All right. So just to jump to the chase. So politicians love to claim credit for incentives. They love to be able to say that they created jobs. And it's very difficult for them to say that their infrastructure policies or their education policies created jobs. So now the problem with incentives is that most of the time it is exactly infrastructure, human capital, size of market that led companies to make the decision in the first place. So most of the time, the incentives are paying for investments that would have come anyway. And in that sense, they're ineffective and redundant. So Tim Bartik at the Upjohn Institute has estimated that that between 75 and 98% of incentives are going to companies that would have come anyway. That allows politicians to claim credit for the jobs, but it doesn't do anything for the economy and in fact hurts taxpayers. Second, even when incentives tend to work, they're inefficient. They tend to overpay. So paying much more in terms of taxes given away than the actual jobs created. So a great example of this is not too far away from me in North Carolina. It's Lenore gave a large incentive to Google to create a server farm, hoping that it would create jobs in the area. But a server farm doesn't create very many jobs at all. And in fact, the jobs that it did create went to people from out of town. So here there was a massive overpayment to Google through the use of the incentive. And finally, a large portion of incentives, especially like corporate income tax reductions, are distortionary. They tend to reward companies that can be profitable quickly and take advantage of, say, a 5-year or a 10-year tax holiday, rather than companies that want to be in the area for a long time. And here, if you want to give an example of this, it's the Missouri-Kansas City border war, where companies have jumped back and forth across the border. Roughly $330 million have been given away for companies just to change their address to move back and forth across the border for politicians to claim credit for these policies. So as a whole, they're generally redundant, and where they do work in luring companies, they tend to have negative externalities on the economies as a whole.
Let me talk about companies deciding to come to a town. I know it seems as though if you look at Amazon, I think some cities, the bidding got so crazy. And I think ultimately when they picked New York, New York said, no, this is not a good deal. We're not going to do it. How important are those incentives when it comes to companies deciding where it is that they're going to put their new factory, new plant, new headquarters, et cetera?
So as I said, I think 75 to 98% of companies have decided already. It actually doesn't have very much impact on their decisions. And I think in the Amazon case, it was pretty clear. There was this huge kind of national bidding war with companies, with states and cities offering all sorts of crazy packages and sending Amazon gifts, like Arizona sent Amazon a cactus. But it was pretty clear at the end of the day that Amazon knew where it wanted to go. And the bidding war was essentially to be able to lower its tax policy to tax payment in the places that it had already decided to go. And I think the second here, the thing that came up in the New York case was what is often not estimated in this is the cost that these companies impose on the places that they're going, right? They use a lot of social services, waste collection, fire department, maintenance. They rely on education and the health services of those places. And by giving away tax incentives, those localities have a difficult time paying for those public services that the company is using. And that's what really was the crux of the issue in New York, which was, is Amazon really going to give back to New York what it's taking away in terms of the new sort of stresses it's going to impose in the New York economy?
In terms of one thing I'm confused about is how do you measure this, Edmund? How would you know if the tax incentives pay off or not? Because at some point you have to look at what would have been there, what wouldn't have been there, what's contributed, what's not. I just don't know what metric you use to determine this.
Yeah. So first of all, the easiest way for me to show you this is that, in Texas and in Maryland and in New Jersey recently, we've seen that that companies actually had already made the decision to invest and already received investment licenses and registration information prior to applying for the incentive. So there it's really easy. I know where they were going to go, and I know that they were already planning to be there, and the incentive was paid later. But we can also the second way we can look at it is that we look at surveys of companies and what affects their investment decisions and ask them to prioritize. And it's pretty clear that incentives are not the biggest policy change, especially state and local taxes, which aren't so much of a company's overall costs. In terms of job creation, here it is really when we sort of measure, have they been effective at creating jobs? This is really difficult because what people that advise on these incentive programs, economic development authorities, like to do is sort of estimate what they call a multiplier effect. It's not just the jobs that the companies themselves are going to create, right? It's the jobs that are going to have spillovers. It's going to create, say, for the auto industry, there will be intermediate input and service providers, say, for example, providing technical assistance or maintenance with on the cars or on the machinery within the car company. And so they make estimates of how many sort of new jobs will be created outside of the original incentive package. But when people have gone back and audited afterwards to see if that multiplier effect came true, it very rarely is the size of what was estimated by the companies that were asking for the bids. And if you want the best example of this, look at the Foxconn, a Taiwanese company that manufactures electronics in Wisconsin, was given a $3 billion incentive and estimated, you know, multiple thousands of jobs. And then that never came clear. They never ended up hiring that many. And the spillover effects of them using local businesses to procure intermediate goods and services also did not come true. So those are basically the three ways that you can do it, which is, you can look at when they actually applied for the licenses. You can survey the companies. And then third, you can actually look at the jobs created. And one thing that we've been doing in our research is filing freedom of information requests with local states and cities in order to see, you know, what exactly the correspondence and information given to companies was and what the companies gave to the state as well.
Somebody texted this in, and before we let you go, and I think it's interesting. We would call it Lanyap here, a little something extra. I guess maybe you could call it synergy, where people are wondering, and this person specifically texted in and said, well, even though it's break even, are there some other things that accrue that otherwise would not have happened?
On an individual project, look, I think that with really, really great, say, for example, city or state planning, where, you have a great idea about how you're going to redevelop downtown and the incentives are targeted specifically at creating sort of anchors within that. I think that in those cases, you might create synergies. But I think the general evidence is that that hasn't – the places that have tried that have not been very successful at pulling it off. So,
Thank you, Edmund. I'm sorry. We've got to go to the news. I appreciate your time. When we come back, we'll talk to Michael Hecht of GNO Inc. He'll tell you the other side of it. So a very interesting question about tax credits and block grants, et cetera, and do they wind up, in essence, paying for themselves or being a good economic thing for the municipality? That when we come back right now, we Facebook Live and pause for an update from CBS.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.